that had the scale and vision of Lyndon Johnson's expansion of U.S. welfare legislation in the 1960s. Robert Halfon added, "Whoever becomes the new government, they need to listen to Mr. Johnson, and I don't mean Boris Johnson, I mean President Lyndon B. Johnson." In 1965, he introduced a landmark war on poverty. Halfon said, "We've had big debates during the leadership contest about the National Health Service and the economy and the cost of living. Yet education seems to have fallen by the wayside." When Lyndon B. Johnson got in, it was the cornerstone of his war on poverty. We need the equivalent of that here. A Department for Education spokesperson said the government recognized schools, much like the wider economy, were facing increased costs. The spokesperson said, "Cost increases should be seen in the wider context of funding for schools, with budgets to rise by £7 billion by 2024-2025, compared with 2021-2022, including £4 billion in this financial year alone. This is a 7% cash terms, a pupil increase, compared with 2021-2022, and will help schools to meet wider cost pressures, including energy prices and staff salaries." Robert Halfon, who is supporting Rishi Sunak in the Tory leadership race, said the additional funding made available to schools was before the war in Ukraine and its impact on energy bills. Robert Halfon said, "Liz Truss has talked about increasing defence and health spending, but what about education? It is the major challenge of our times, in my view." Estelle Morris, a former Labour Education Secretary, echoed his concerns. She said, "In Birmingham, where I chair the Education Partnership, it's a huge issue. My frustration is the lack of honesty on the part of the government. When the head teachers say the costs are so enormous it's causing them a problem, the only response you get is, 'We've increased the school budget by X.'" She added, "Schools are about to go back, and as far as I can hear and see, there's not a sensible conversation going on. Nothing is going to happen unless we've got ministers who say, 'I can see this is a problem.' Any money they announced as extra, it was never ever to do with the increased cost of energy." Estelle Morris also expressed concern about the state of school buildings. She said, "We can't have cold schools. It's against the law. I remember when I was a teacher, if the temperature dropped and we couldn't keep schools warm, if the boiler broke down, for example, we had to send the kids home." She added, "We can't be the sort of nation that claims to be trying to steady the ship after all these children have suffered under the pandemic, then say we're closing schools because we can't pay the electricity or the gas bill. We can't be that kind of a country." On school opening hours, the Department for Education spokesperson said, "Regular school attendance is vital for children's education, development and well-being, and we expect all schools to be open morning and afternoon, 5 days a week." Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, said, "We're extremely concerned that the new term will see schools and colleges in the midst of a full-blown funding crisis, and that they will have to make impossible choices about where to make cuts." Jeff Barton added, "The problem is that they're facing huge increases in energy bills, as well as pay awards for which there is no additional government funding. The last thing they want to do is cut educational provision, but with massive extra costs and not enough money to pay for them, there is only one way this is going to go."
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Back to Reality. In the studio with me, I have the honor of hosting two special guests. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, gentlemen. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so
Brother
much for
Yasser,
having us.
How do you do?
I'm good, thank you.
And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
The honor and pleasure is all mine. I appreciate the fact that the three of us are from roughly different ages in the late 20s, early 40s spectrum. And I think because of that, we can share kind of varied life experiences with each other. I think that would be quite beneficial for the topic we're going to discuss today, because life is all about the relationships we have with ourselves, with our Lord, and with people, right? All of that comes with a lot of ma'rifah and knowledge. The knowledge and ma'rifah of the self and the Lord is, I think, something for a totally different show. So today we're going to try to talk about ma'rifah and knowledge toward people. Brother okay. Yasser, would you consider yourself a good judge of character?
I think I can, to some extent, judge people's character by looking
Where
at them.
Where do you think you get that from? Is it from experience? Did you work on it?
No, I haven't worked on it. I have done a little bit, but I think instinct and experience, I think.
Experience, yeah. Right. What steps did you take in order to know people better?
So basically, I work with a lot of people.
That's in your line of work?
Yeah, yeah.
Your
so
profession,
that's,
okay.
That's my profession. I don't know what you can call it, but that's what I do on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I work
do
with a lot of people.
Do you enjoy it, though?
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow, that took forever to answer.
No, the reason I'm doubting is because I'm a very reserved person.
Exactly, so that's why I asked. Do you enjoy interacting with people so much?
I enjoy what I do is because it's a duty. I see it as a duty for myself,
okay.
And I enjoy doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So whatever serves that cause.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
And so right now I'm working with people. It's difficult to work with people, to be fair.
If you could avoid it, would you?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's my personality. Again,
okay.
that's the personality.
You're introverted.
Thing.
That's totally fine.
I'm very
fine.
Strongly introverted, yeah. Which also is questions why I'm actually here. Working with different people on a daily basis, I think you slowly get to know how people work and what kind of people behave in what kind of ways, basically.
Mm. Right. And obviously knowing more about them helps more with your work, right?
Of course, yeah. You get to know how different type of people interact, mm-hmm. how they feel, how they think.
How to serve them better.
How to serve them better, how they can serve better. So a lot of time is, giving work to people so that they deliver. And you come to realize that this type of personality doesn't deliver in this way.
Yes.
Or the way you interact with this person has to be different. Otherwise, they take it in the wrong way or... it's quite...
That is so important, to be able to read people like that.
Yeah.
Because
it comes with a lot of mistakes, and that's how you learn it, with experience.
I think it's safe to call it social skills, basically.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And a lot of introverts like that because they're constantly in their own shell, and they don't like exposure to other people.
Yeah.
So they never have the opportunity to develop those social skills.
Yeah, so you have to be thrown into it, which is
exactly
what happened to me. The duty and opportunity came, was thrown into it, and it's not so bad.
Yeah,
it's
congrats,
just it's outside
though.
Your comfort zone.
Yeah. It's all about growth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sayyid Abdullah, do you particularly enjoy interacting with people? I think you do. You come
no,
across.
No, I don't actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
When it comes to people, it's not an easy task. You can't just.
Why do you think it's hard?
Because the people that you hang around with, the people that you speak with, the people that you come in contact with, they will leave a mark on you in a way or another.
Right. So you're afraid
so you have
of getting
to be very
hurt,
careful who
case?
To talk to and who to walk with and who to talk, to interact
with. Yeah.
So do I want to interact with anyone? No. Do I like to choose the people that I interact with? Yes.
Of course.
So like Brother Yasser said, in my line of work, I would have to deal with a lot of people, but not necessarily I'm dealing with them because I want to, because I have to. In terms of me having to have my own circle of friends, for example, right now, if I have to count my friends for you, they won't go over 5.
For sure. And I think that comes
with
age
because,
as well.
Like I said, because even from Islamic perspective, from the hadith, from the Quran, that your friends would get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
if you choose the bad ones or the ones who are just not in tuned in your same ideology. So do I like it? No, I don't like it. I would rather, I'm an introvert to begin with myself, which actually does half of the job for me, which is actually great.
Mm.
To some extent, it kept me safe from a lot of things. If I look at the people that were in my time, for example, even my friends, yep, who were like classmates or university mates, and they were like Manjula, like Muslims and Shia as well, but compared to where I am now, what they are now, it's a huge difference.
Because that's exactly, yeah.
I consider a lot of things in terms when it comes to interacting and socializing with people.
This is so important. Yeah. We really need to talk in depth about those aspects that we take into consideration when it comes to interaction. You're listening to Back to Reality. We're going to be back to reality after a short break, so don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
How do you feel you need to vibe with someone? Because here's the thing, right? I feel personally, as I get older, I become more introverted and I become more reserved. I don't necessarily enjoy talking to people who are out of my clique, right? Because I feel like, yeah, I don't have the mental capacity to speak about things that not only don't contribute to my growth, but are actually like detrimental to my peace of mind. I'm wondering, what are those factors that we look for in life as we develop, as we grow, that would allow people to come in or to stay in our lives?
Well, it depends. You know how they say that if you want to be a successful businessman, associate yourself with successful businessmen or women.
Oh, like surround yourself with who you want to be.
Surround yourself with the people that you want to be with, right?
Or like surround yourself with people that you don't mind them rubbing off you.
Yeah, or you want to walk. You know, like, من عشرة قوم أربعين يمن صار منهم. If you go with a group for 40 days, you become amongst them. That's the hadith, right?
You become one of
them. So I think the criteria is that sometimes it chooses you. Sometimes you just find yourself in the middle of a group and you just follow the crowd. And sometimes no. You say, okay, I don't want this one, I want this one. So you choose those who are in the same path as yours and you walk with them. So I think, I don't know, it's not a matter of criteria, it's a matter of what kind of people you want to associate with. And I think each one has their own ideologies. It can't be always the same. So some people like to associate themselves with those who play games, for example, those who play soccer,
sports.
And so, you know, each one has their own.
Yeah, so it depends on like what you're looking for, right? Where you are in life.
I also think we should be quite very careful, because sometimes what happens is that we want to socialize with people that click with us.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for example, people who are in our fields and stuff. And we end up shunning away other people. And we need to be careful in terms of our social interactions and our social manners.
Like not to be biased?
Not only not to be biased, but also how we choose between friends. So, for example, some people might have the idea that, for example, when we say that, you know, pick your friends or don't interact with the opposite gender, for example, that means we need to be harsh with the other people, right? When we say interact with good Muslims, for example, that means, you know, when somebody's not a good Muslim, just be mean to them. Or, you know, like that means, you know, when a girl comes and talks to you, be rude to her.
Right.
We should be careful about that. That's not what it means, right? When we say choose your friends properly, choose your company properly, it doesn't mean be rude to the rest, you know. We should keep our manners. We should be polite to people. We should speak respectfully. But there's a limit to how much we would interact with them. We should always keep it friendly. We should always keep it respectful. But the amount and the extent is what changes, right? With your close friends, you've picked them properly. You've been very picky in how you choose your friends. And that's really important.
Because that's what I'm wondering. How do you know someone good enough in order to give them the pass?
I think the thing that has a huge impact is a person's goal. If you know what a person's goal is, then you're most likely going to click with them. And this is also one of the main criteria in spouse selection as well. So that's another type of interaction, right? You're going to choose somebody to live with for the rest of your life. How do you know you're going to click, right? Is it because you like the same movies or the same actors or the same sports? or is it because you have the same goal?
When
you have the same goal, then you're going to be ready to compromise on certain other minor stuff.
True.
But if the compatibility is in the hobbies, then when the serious stuff comes, you're not going to be able to compromise. You'll just go your own ways. And with friends and co-workers and employers and employees, I think it's the same thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Back to Reality. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us. Joining us again on Back to Reality. On this episode, we are talking with Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasir on whether it's possible to actually know people and how. So, Brother Yasir, you were saying that the main thing we can focus on when it comes to knowing other people better and deciding whether or not we want to allow them to be our people is to identify their goals.
Yeah. I think that has a big impact.
That has to be really hard for someone who doesn't even know their own goals yet.
Yeah, so we have to, that comes with time, that comes with thinking, that comes with discovering yourself. Mm. And obviously, you're not going to know who to hang out with if you don't know what you're doing in life. Right.
True.
That's a natural thing. And it's not only to do with Islam. I think anything in life, right? Whether you're going for a big career, you're going for, becoming popular, you're going for sports, whatever you're doing, you have to finally realize what you want to do. And then you'll find out what kind of people you want to hang around with. So I think it applies to everything. But having a goal in mind, I think makes a huge, huge difference in what you do with yourself and how then you would interact with society.
Mm.
So as in, just like we started, I was talking about why I interact with people. If it was left to me, I would ideally not interact with people, right? But because I have a goal in mind, my duty right now, what I understand that Allah expects for me is to do this particular task that I've taken up, mm-hmm. these projects I've taken up. And it so happens that these projects require me to talk to people,
right.
I'm going to do it. This sort of becomes an ibadah. Allah knows I don't like it. And I see it as my duty and my service to Allah, and I do it. And I hope, inshallah, Allah accepts
it. It's such a beautiful way of looking at it. It gives it meaning. And as soon as something has meaning...
Exactly. It's much easier to do as well. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think Nietzsche says that I can handle any how as long as I know the why. Like, I have meaning for what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Sayyid Abdullah, what do you think, in your experience, has been the hardest aspect in interacting with people? Like, at the beginning you said that they affect you, they leave a print on you, right? And that could be like psychological, mental, spiritual. Maybe in addition to that, or aside from that, or whatever, you want to explain on that more. What is the hardest part of interacting with people? The hardest part to understand about them?
Understand about them and interact with them is two different things. Depends on the motives that you have for each of these two categories.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of interaction, sometimes, you know how the hadith says, "Al-mu'min yanzuru bi'ayn Allah," the believer, he sees with the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes, I don't know, you get this, you see a person and you get this like really feeling, this vibe that you don't want to approach them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you force to, you have to deal with them in a way or another.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the hardest parts in terms of dealing with people, that you have to deal with people or speak with people or interact with people that
So your
you
gut
don't
is telling you that this person is a no-go zone, but
yeah,
the
but
circumstances
like he, for example, I mean, even like, for example, take the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for example. He had to deal with Abu Lahab and Abu Jahl and all the munafiqeen around him. And Allah said to him, you know what? You know the munafiqeen, we know them, but don't talk.
Yeah.
You know how difficult that is?
So hard. Yet
has to deal with them.
Yeah, true.
And same thing with the Amir al-Mu'minin, same with the Imams. And it's just a human nature. Sometimes you are surrounded with the worst people possible, but you just can't do anything about it.
And then you can always have the option of cutting them off, though.
Yeah,
you're
if you
not
can,
a
obviously, in terms of you can or you have to. But that said, I'm saying in cases you don't have no other choice.
Mm.
That's you're saying what's the worst part in interacting with people? That's it.
Right.
Beside that, you can say salam alaikum, get to know them, hang around them, you get to feel how they are, their mentality. Usually within the 5, 10, 15 minutes, you can tell who they are. And then, you choose whether you should expand your relationship with this person or just limit it
just
to...
Just keep it on courtesy.
Yeah.
There's so much more to talk about regarding this topic. Obviously, there's like 8 billion people in the world. And that's all the time we have for today. So thank you so very much for being with us. Until another episode of Back to Reality, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Iran's central bank says Tehran and Moscow have officially started doing business in their national currencies, adding both countries are considering de-dollarizing other parts of their economic ties. Tehran and Moscow had long been seeking to create a mechanism to replace the US dollar with their national currencies, rial and ruble, as part of a joint de-dollarization agenda, regardless of the tough economic sanctions in place against the two nations. Iran and Russia have both been subjected to tough economic sanctions by Western countries and are determined to deepen their economic cooperation, adding that there are great capacities for increasing the volume of bilateral trade. Several officials in Tehran and Moscow have repeatedly accused the United States of using the dollar as an instrument to wage economic and political war. China is another economic and political power that has opted to move toward de-dollarization. In fact, Iran, Russia, and China have discussed the de-dollarization of their trade for decades and have considered launching an alternative for the worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication Global Network, or SWIFT. Following the breakout of the Russia-Ukraine conflict early this year, U.S.-led Western governments imposed several rounds of financial sanctions on Moscow, including freezing its foreign exchange reserves. The thought that the U.S. may move to confiscate one's assets in case they refuse to accept what Washington dictates has caused more countries to consider diversifying their reserve assets away from U.S. dollar. Consequently, many countries have turned away from European democracies and Washington. Regardless of who wins the Ukraine war, the United States and its allies will be the strategic losers. Russia will probably build closer relations with China and other countries on the Eurasian continent, including India, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the Persian Gulf Arab countries.
We are seeing a deepening of ties unlike any other time that we've seen before. And ultimately, what this means is that the relationship between Russia and China is no longer being governed by the same economic rules that had governed it prior to this year. That is that Russian rubles are being traded. They're no longer doing business in dollars. And ultimately, that is hurting the United States. And it's going to change the dollar's hegemony.
In recent years, with the increased weaponization of the dollar and Washington's use of the dollar to sanction the so-called unruly countries in America's eyes, many countries in the world have awakened and begun to experiment trading in their own national currencies. Since the U.S. has been using the dollar and sanctions as a weapon to hurt other economies, its competitors have no obligation to help the U.S. maintain the dollar hegemony. The dollar's decades-long dominance has placed America in a strong position to dictate the terms of global trade and finance for the last 70 years. But this time, Russia wants to do something different, as Moscow is determined to launch a counter-offensive against Western sanctions and the dollar-centric global financial system. Following the unprecedented Western financial and economic sanctions, Moscow asked all unfriendly countries that are imposing sanctions on it to pay for their fuel purchases in Russia's rubles. The measure immediately helped stabilize the value of the ruble and significantly diffused the negative impact of Western sanctions. In addition to crude oil and natural gas, some economists have suggested Moscow extend the requirement for importers of Russia's grain, chemical fertilizers, and other products to transact in rubles instead of dollars or euros.
I think what we're witnessing now is the birth of a multipolar world order. And what that means ultimately is that after the collapse of the Soviet Union in the late 80s and early 90s, the United States became the single hegemonic global power. And what we are seeing now is that the United States, after two decades of brutal wars in the Middle East, in North Africa, of the rampant imperialist expansion and regime change policies and nation building policies of the US regime, that now Russia, China, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, South Africa, many countries are coming together and saying no more to US expansionism.
Russia and China certainly are engaged in a bid to change the U.S. rules-based order, but instead of trying to replace one hegemony, that is the dollar, with another, they are encouraging the rest of the world to assert their autonomy and independence.
Rising costs in the U.S. have pushed Americans to the edge with soaring inflation and the government's inability to control the matter so far. Inflation in the U.S. has shattered all previous records in March and currently is hovering around 8.5%. With inflation hitting the highest rate since 1981, the rising cost of living has been squeezing households and putting pressure on policymakers to bring the issue under control. And now government officials have warned Americans that the worst is yet to come. The U.S. Federal Reserve's Chair Jerome Powell has warned of pain ahead for Americans in the battle against inflation. While pledging that the Fed will continue to act forcefully, he also warned that the U.S. job market will suffer in order to get prices down. He says the damage which will be dealt to the job market is an unfortunate cost of reducing inflation.
Well, you know, monetary policy only has an effect of 6 to 9 months of a lag. He just started raising interest rates here significantly in the last 2 months. So it won't really start to have an impact on inflation here until fourth quarter, maybe, of this year. But it won't have that much impact, I don't believe. I don't believe that it's going to be very quickly reducing inflation from its current 8.5% down to the Federal Reserve's 2% target here within the next 6 months or even within the next 18 months. I don't think they're going to get it down to that. They're going to continue raising rates because the only real solution, even if it is a limited solution, is monetary policy interest rates. They aren't going to hike taxes to slow down the economy. Government spending is just shifting from social program spending to military spending and subsidies to corporations kind of spending. So fiscal policy isn't going to do anything. Monetary policy can only have a limited effect, but the Fed is going to push that solution as high and as long as it can to shake out whatever it can shake out in terms of inflation.
According to recent surveys, Americans believe inflation tops the list of problems the country is faced with. This has led to U.S. President Joe Biden's approval ratings plunging heavily, leaving the Republicans criticizing him over the issue. Nevertheless, the U.S. government seems to be more concerned about the conflict in Ukraine, where it has so far given away billions of dollars in weaponry. The price of gasoline in the U.S. has witnessed a record high, averaging more than $5 a gallon in recent weeks for the first time ever. Meanwhile, Biden's attempts of lowering prices, which have included draconian measures like releasing crucial gasoline emergency reserves and even begging the Saudis to increase their oil output, have so far proven to be ineffective. While Americans are suffering and getting crushed under the dire economic situation, the government headed by Biden has just pledged another $3 billion U.S. dollars in aid to Ukraine. Washington has already assisted Ukraine with more than $18 billion in military aid since the launch of the Russian special military operation. But why is it that while Biden has described combating inflation as his top domestic priority, the government can't think about its own citizens before spending money on these wars?
This is only the beginning of subsidizing Ukraine. It's like $60 to $70 billion already in just 6 months. Ukraine says it needs $7 billion a month just to keep its economy going. Treasury Secretary Yellen of the U.S. Said we're going to give you $4 billion. So the U.S. is propping up Ukraine economically and militarily and so forth. It's becoming, you know, an economic satrapy of the United States. The U.S. is deeply penetrated economically in Ukraine. That's why it won't leave. And that's why, you know, it provoked this situation with this war purposely. The U.S. Really sees it's got, you know, it's 2 feet on the ground there in Ukraine. And its whole policy with regard to this war is just to continue the war in a low grade, well, maybe not so even low grade, for as long as necessary.
All in all, the U.S. is reeling from its support of Ukraine in its conflict with Russia, while its economy is seeing a severe downfall. But this is only the latest in a catalog of problems, from increasing social divisions and political paralysis to an inability to recover from the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. And all this has led many to believe the U.S. is losing its power and standing in the world. The Palestinian Authority has renewed its push for full membership at the United Nations amid long-time acts of obstructionism and opposition by the United States. Any application for full membership at the UN would need approval from the Security Council, and that means the U.S. participation. The Palestinian ambassador to the UN says he has been consulting with Security Council members over a possible full membership bid over the past weeks. But the U.S., a full-fledged supporter of the occupying Israeli regime and a UNSC member with a veto power, on the other hand, has once again reiterated its opposition to the move, saying it will block it. The U.S.'s reason behind rejection of the Palestinians' push for membership: it should only occur after the resolution of an agreement for a two-state solution. But the real reason behind the U.S.'s opposition to Palestine's move is that membership would mean full international recognition of Palestine as an independent country on the international stage. In other words, Palestinian statehood, and that would be consequential for Israel. Yet the U.S. is at much fault for Palestinian situation, as is Israel. PA's ambassador to the UN has said, given that the peace process has been frozen for 8 years and that there is no initiative on the table, the issue of full UN membership should move forward.
Well, the United States provides $3.8 billion of military aid to the Israeli occupation every year on an annual basis. So what this means is that the United States is a full partner in all of the war crimes and crimes against humanity perpetrated by the Israeli regime. And this has been the case for decades upon decades. I mean, throughout the nearly 75 years of Nakba against the Palestinian people, the United States and other imperialist powers like Britain and France and Germany have been full partners with the occupation and these crimes against the Palestinian people. I mean, Palestinians have the right not only to full representation and recognition at the United Nations, but more importantly and fundamentally for the liberation of all of Palestine. And, you know, really what we need to be talking about is kicking Israel, kicking the Zionist regime out of the United Nations, not just recognizing Palestine.
In 2012, Palestine was granted non-member status, but this was done in the General Assembly, where no member has veto power. And now this has raised the assumption that Palestine may be following the same path to gain full membership. The Palestinian Authority's push comes just several weeks ahead of the UN General Assembly, where world leaders are set to convene in New York for their annual summit. Israel says any vote for the Palestinian cause and against its illegal actions impedes negotiations and progress in a chance for better lives for Israelis and Palestinians. The regime claims that a vote against it would obstruct peace, but these claims come in contrast to what is happening on the ground. Just looking at the past few weeks, Israel has ramped up its attacks on Palestinian towns and cities, leaving dozens dead and many others injured. Palestine, on the other hand, has been adamant that its full membership was essential if there was to be any chance of leading a dormant peace process. But why is Israel so persistent against Palestine gaining full UN membership?
Well, what we've been seeing throughout the years is that in the United Nations, the United States has consistently used its veto power in the Security Council in order to prevent the Israeli regime from being held accountable for its crimes, just as it has used that same power in the Security Council to attempt to impose its will upon other countries and to protect its own war crimes and crimes against humanity from being held up to any meaningful form of accountability. And so, of course, the Israeli occupation wants to completely erase Palestinian identity and existence, and that's been the case for the past 75 years. But what's really important is actually to fight back against and boycott and isolate, including in the United Nations, the occupation regime. Because simply saying that, Palestine is recognized in the United Nations is not doing enough to actually liberate Palestinians from the grasp of colonialism, occupation, and apartheid.
The last round of Israeli-Palestinian talks collapsed in 2014. Among the major sticking points in those negotiations was Israel's continued settlement expansion activities in the occupied lands. Iran's proposal for the issue of Palestine to hold a mass referendum, something Iran's leader has said would be a logical solution to the conflict.
It has been a rocky economic road that the Brits are traveling on, which continues to chip away at their income. Some were questioning how they would manage their expenses in the UK these days. Why, with an unprecedented inflation and a cost of living crisis, now their nightmare has gotten worse. An 80% increase in electric and gas bills have been announced, one that is coming before the winter season.
It is a major problem because what is happening, of course, is, first of all, real incomes are falling because people are not getting wage settlements in line with inflation, but below inflation. Then tax burden has increased, you know, to record levels as well. The government has been raising taxes to pay for the furlough scheme and all the money that they splurged.
To be exact, an 80% increase would mean that it would average about £3,600, or about $4,200 per year from October. And this is terrible news, especially for the poor and the ones at the bottom half of the social strata. The UK was suffering already from high energy prices, in particular heating bills, even before the Ukraine crisis began. So bad was the situation that fuel poverty, as it was called, was leading to deaths for people who could not afford to heat their homes. These are the stats that are truly shocking, that one would not expect from a European country. For example, this article in 2020 pointed out to how thousands of people in the UK died from the cold, and that fuel poverty was to blame. On average, there were 32,000 more deaths between December and March than the rest of the year. Many perished because of the refusal of a society with abundant wealth and resources to provide for its most vulnerable citizens. An average of 9,700 deaths each year were believed to be caused by living in a cold house.
We know we need to do more because actually the most vulnerable households have no cushion, have nothing available to them. So what I'm looking at is how I can target that help for those people, not just to January.
The unprecedented hike for energy prices in the UK will surely affect the UK's economy. One obvious outcome of this price increase is that it will chip away at people's spending power and income. This is while people's income has not kept pace with the inflation rate. Increases have been minimal or not at all. This may explain why there have been so many strikes and protests recently in different sectors in the UK. The latest, the postal worker strike. 115,000 workers across 1,500 locations. Criminal barristers and mass rail strikes have also plagued the UK, as the country is battling a historic cost of living crisis. The outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sure left an economic mess for the next administration to deal with. But was it all his fault? The UK did not have a sound economy even before the pandemic started. Among the group of G7 economies, the UK has suffered the highest inflation rate than any other G7 country, as price rises have reached a 40-year record, with inflation recorded at 10.1% in the year for the month of July. That is the highest since the year 1982. And with the Ukraine crisis showing no signs of ending, the future looks bleak for the country, especially since the new administration will not officially begin work until October. And Boris Johnson's view on this, the new administration will clearly have to help people with energy bills.
That I know that even if things can sometimes seem dark now.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرجهم.
Welcome back again, respected brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum. Let's inshallah continue our review session. So Brother Ali Nasser, Fawad Haider and Hussein Ruhullah, welcome back again.
Thank you.
Welcome.
هذا النور شفاء صدور فاض وعطر كل لسان وهنا حلقات الصديق قلب ينبض بالقرآن وهنا حلقات الصديق قلب ينبض بالقرآن.
So guys, we were doing like a quick review on the rules of Nuni Sakin and Tanween. Okay?
Yes.
Right? So whenever we have the throat letters, we apply the rule Ilha, right? So what were the throat letters? Hamza?
He
Ha
Ha
Ha and
Ayn
and
Ghain.
Yes. Ayn Ghain, Ha Ha, Hamza Ha.
Yes.
So Hamza Ha, they are separate letters, not pairs, okay, or couples. But ha kha, they are kind of the same. Brothers. Ayn ghain, they are the same. All right?
Yes.
So these six letters are there, so whenever you meet them, or actually not you, okay? So whenever the tanween or nun sakina in any of them meets one of these letters, or they come before and hamza or any of those letters comes next, so what do you apply? The rule? Izhar. How do you apply the rule Izhar?
By not applying.
any rule.
Yes.
Not changing anything. Just Tanween is pronounced as Tanween. Nun Sakina is pronounced as Nun Sakina. For example, the word Min Hu. How do you say this?
Min
Hu. Min Hu. Simple as that. Nothing is changed. Yes. Not Min Hu or Minhu or whatever. Okay? Minhu. No, nothing. So, whenever you have Tanween or Nun Sakina plus one of these six letters, the rule Idghar. So, what was the rule Ikhfa? That was easy. Let's talk about the rule Idgham first. Idgham.
Merging letters.
Yeah, merging. Yeah, great. Merging. Idgham means merging.
Merging.
So, there are two types of merging, yes? Merging with
Ghunna.
And merging without?
Ghunna.
What was ghunna?
A nasal sound.
Nasal sound. That this sound. Okay, now, what were the letters that make you or force you to apply the rule Idgham?
Qutbijad
letters?
No.
MashaAllah.
Yarmalun letters?
Yarmalun letters, not Qutbijad letters. Qutbijad letters were in?
Qalqala.
So, Yarmalun letters. So, what are Yarmalun letters?
Yeah. Re, La, Mim, Nun.
If you say Ye, that is Farsi one or Persian one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ra,
Mim, Lam, Waw, Nun. Yarmalun. Six letters. So, six letters for Idharul. Six letters for?
Idgham.
So, what do you exactly do with these letters? What exactly idgham means here?
Merging.
Merging. How do you merge?
We merge.
How do you merge? For example, you have tanween or nun sakin.
You combine both
plus
sounds.
One of them. You combine the sound of?
Like one of these letters to the next letter.
Yeah. So how do you, for example, the word mim nun man nun sakin. Then you have ya. How do you say this?
Me.
No. Me or may.
May.
Yes, whatever. So if it has fatha. Man ya'mal. Faman ya'mal. How do you say this?
Famay ya'mal.
Ah, mashallah. Famay ya'mal. Noon is merged to ya as if noon is gone.
Yes.
It's no longer there, okay?
I have a question. Yep. It only connects from the sixth letter to, again, from those like ya to lam, mim to waw. Or other letters are involved as well.
No. So look, the letter Nun Sakin or Tanween will be merged into or with
just the Yarmalun letters.
Yeah, just the Yarmalun letters. Okay? So that's why we say Yarmalun letters. We call it merging, yes? Idgham. That's it, these six letters. Okay? But remember, I told you in this lesson that we have tashdeed as well, yes? Shadda. So shadda means also, like two letters are merged together.
we have double letters. For example, you say Rabb. This Rabb, the first ba is sakin, the second ba has fatha.
Lillah.
Yeah, no, lillah, yes. These two lam are also merged. So I told you, sometimes we have idgham. Idgham was? Idgham?
Mithlain.
Mashallah. The two identical letters. That's also idgham, merging, okay? But what we mean here is idgham with nun sakin or tanween. Okay? So from these six letters, they are divided into two groups, all right? So idgham with ghunna. What were the letters?
Yamun.
Ya, meem, wal, and nun. So what does idgham with ghunna mean?
Idgham with the nasal
sound. Yeah. You prolong it for how many counts?
Two counts.
فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ
For just two counts, we can continue to...
Two counts? No, the normal sound is two counts. But it's ghunna, okay?
But if ghunna, you add more, ghunna, is it wrong?
Remember, ghunna has two count sounds.
If you add more, it's wrong?
No, it's okay. Because in the recitation, you can prolong it. فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ Look, how many counts? Four counts. It depends on your recitation, okay? That's not wrong.
Like, we can stretch
but
how
less
much
than
we
that,
want.
Less than that is wrong. If you
we
say,
can stretch how much we want.
This is wrong.
We what? Can stretch how much we want.
Up to six counts.
More than six
like
counts.
Like the mat, okay? It's like the mat.
Yes.
But you, in the mat, that's what we studied, that you can prolong it more.
Yeah.
Okay? It is that, but normal, the normal sound is two counts, okay?
Two counts.
You can prolong it for four counts,
six counts. How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
But remember that sometimes we prolong it to an extent that even the rhythm of the ayah or the sound of the ayah is kind of changed. You don't have to do it, okay? Uh-huh. No need to do this. Enough, okay? So that was about idgham with ghunna. But about four letters, what are there? Yes? Ya, Mim, Waw, Nun. Yamun. Remember this word. Yamun. Easy. So, the next two letters left, Lam and Ra. Okay? Lam and Ra.
Yes.
So, idgham with?
Without.
Out Ghunna.
Yes.
With? Out Ghunna, yes?
Without.
Yes. Send the Ghunna out.
Yes.
So, idgham with out Ghunna, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
So, with. Out ghunna, what does it mean? It means that you do not apply the rule ghunna.
Yes.
Not for two counts. Just merge them. Go ahead. How? Min ra.
Mir.
You do not need to. Mir rabbihim. I want to prolong it for four counts. No. Don't do it, okay? Mir. Even two counts, no. Mir rabbihim. Simple. Mir rabbihim, go on. So merged this meme to that ra, while actually noon is merged, okay? When noon is merged, okay, so the ra sound is there. Then meme is simply joined with that sakin ra. Mir rabbihim, noon is sacrificed actually here, okay? It is the victim. So that was about idgham with ghunna and without ghunna. Then we talked about the rule, iqlab, then ikhfa. Yes?
Yes.
Because they're like the rest of the letters, when they are left, any letters left, the rule ikhfa will be applied for. So, the rule iqlab for what? The rule iqlab was applied with what letters? How many letters were there? Five or ten?
One.
One?
Yes.
What letter was that?
Ba or
the letter ba.
Ba.
Okay.
Yes.
The letter ba. Only. So the letter ba. How do you do the word? The what does the club mean?
Changing.
Changing.
Yes.
Changing. Okay. Changing the sound of one letter to another letter.
Simple.
Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, sometimes, okay, we have this in, like sometimes the letter da, ta with two dots. Ta and the letter ta. Sometimes they come next to one another, okay? You change the sound of, or for example, you merge the sound of ta to ta, or you change the sound of ta to ta, and you only pronounce the letter ta.
Tot.
Okay? So we have some words, okay? Inshallah. I think we
can now we
them.
Pronounce it that?
Dramuslain, I think.
Shay, can we not just pronounce it that?
Dal.
Yeah.
No, no. It is in a word, okay? When it's in the word, okay? So it happens another way, in another way. So, iqlab was to change the sound of tanween or nun sakin to a slight meme. Yeah, a soft meme.
Yes. I have a question.
Was it a complete meme? Yeah.
Tathir. It's you.
Tathir. No, tathir. No, no. I mean, look, there was an example. I forgot it now. Both were sakin. Both were sakin, okay? Ta and ta. Both were sakin. It was in the Quran. I just forgot the example.
So, tat both are sakin.
No, tat is not. Tat both are not sakin. Ta has fatha.
Yes.
Ta.
Ta.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Boy, there's a word before it.
Yeah. So, inshallah, when I remember that word, I will tell you. But now I don't have it in my mind. Okay. What was I telling you? Iqlab.
Iqlab.
The nun sakin or tanween sound will be changed to a slight or a kind of soft meme sound. Was it a complete meme?
No.
No. A half meme. As if there is just a little space.
Mail.
For example, a...
Paper.
Paper. Yeah, paper.
Meow.
Meow. That sound. Not complete meme. So when you say meme, the lips touch.
Yes.
Yeah?
Meow.
This is. Okay? Meow ba'di.
Meow
ba'di. Okay? Meow ba'di. That's it. That was about iqlab. Let's take a break, inshallah, okay? And we'll be back. Stay with us, respected brothers and sisters who listen to us. Thank you so much. Thanks to Allah Almighty, first and foremost. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International Schools Network. We will be back. Stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil fajr.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.